Revelation chapter 16. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, "Go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth." And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth. And there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. And the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea. And it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. And the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, "Thou art righteous, O Lord, which art and was and shall be, because thou hast judged us. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy." And I heard another out of the altar say, "Even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments." And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over these plagues. And they repented not to give him glory. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and reputed not of their deeds. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the waters thereof was dried up, and the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirit-like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are the spirits of death.
Brother Caleb.
Is that right? Probably should have done this before we started. We're always so organised in Australia. Okay.
Well, brothers and sisters, if I asked you what makes you think that Christ is returning soon, what would you say?
Nation of Israel.
Yeah, last days, primary and partial restoration before the advent. What else? Okay, the earth is, what, in a moral sense or physically? Both, yeah. Well, amen to that. It's true, isn't it? And the quote in Revelation, I think it's 11 there, "God will destroy those that destroy the earth." You know, people like to quote that because we should divide up our rubbish and put our plastics in the right bin. The word destroy means to morally corrupt. And yet man would have us to believe that if we put our articles in the correct bin, then we're good saints, we're good citizens. We're not. We can be as nasty as we want to our brothers and sisters or to our next door neighbour, but as long as you pick up your litter, come on. But that's our world today, and that makes me think, yeah, you're right, the Lord is returning soon. Anything else? I mean, this talk, see, this is the problem with this type of talk, how we know he's going to return soon, because we could do the sixth vial, and I know, I don't even know why I had that reading. I apologise. Organised again. Because we could do the sixth vial, but I'm not going to look at that. And the drying up of the river Euphrates, and then the frog-like spirits through the earth. And that's another reason. And we could look at all the epidemics in the world, you know, the ozone layer and El Nino, and you guys have had bird flu, horse flu, Asian flu, swine flu, normal flu. It goes on and on. It's enough to give you a stroke, it really is. But do you want to know why I really think? Just that friend of mine again. He knows something's going to happen. I think the world's going too fast. We're just travelling at such a velocity that it's not just an economic way or a moral way or in a physical way. The world cannot keep up this pace. We're starting to break up. We really are. So we want to look at those things what is it about this world? Like, something's going on out there that's causing people to be exhausted. Like, this is, I'll give you some signs of the times, and you know, some of them are funny, but you'll feel, like I do, always busy. Like, I never have time. Time poor. And we want to then ask ourselves, well, what sort of effect is this having on the truth in our life? You know, look at some of the signs of the times. Where did that little button thing go, Everett? Ah, there it is. That's true, though. It's heartening for anybody here that is a teacher. Are there any maths teachers? That's good, because I've got some maths coming up, and I don't know much about maths. So I'm, oh, okay. A Texas man was booked for doing over 387 kilometres per hour. What's that in miles?
240.
I should have done the calculation, organised as normal, but that's too fast, isn't it? There's a racetrack. Well, you don't think it's too fast. There's a racetrack in Australia called Phillip Island where they have the bikes, and they were lengthening the straight so that they couldn't even get to that speed on that. So they're going faster than the elite sportsmen. Big pardon? It's crazy. Things are out of control. But if they are, look at this. Evangelicals do that. Because you haven't got time. At least people say, well, if I pay $10, at least prayers are getting said for me. On your computer, 24 hours a day, people say, well, I know it's not right, but maybe you'll do something. You get to that point of desperation. I mean, this is not in the truth, but this is the world we live in. That's crazy. Time magazine reports kids burning out at 9 years old. There's the parents, you know, the vicarious parents that are forcing their kids to music lessons, after school tuition, to sport, elite sports on the weekends, and then training two or three nights a week, plus piano, plus violin. Like, I know some of these kids. No wonder the poor things are breaking down. Pushing, pushing, pushing. Trying to live out their lives in their kids. But this is not a figment of our imagination. This is actually happening. I like this one. The woman's trying to develop a 5-day nappy. She said, I know, but... Oh, yes, sorry. A diaper. In Australia, they're nappies. She says, I just haven't got time. And the kid doesn't care. 5 days. You laugh at it. That's the desperation the world's getting to. These are true. Harvard Uni man, he quit, hit the wall, had to quit. They checked him into the hospital and they ran some tests on him. Diagnosis came back, exhausted. He had to take a 3-month sabbatical. Couldn't even go back to work for over 12 months. So something's going on in our world that's causing people to be wheezing, overcommitted, exhausted, no margin in their life. You know as well as I do, we're all feeling this. Have you ever taken yourself to the dentist and ever said, like, I just can't wait to fall into that chair? I mean, it terrifies me, going to the dentist. And there's reports of people falling asleep during root canal. Has anybody ever had root canal? I'm just going to submit that that's not normal, okay? It cannot be normal. Things out there are happening that just shouldn't be happening. I like this one. In 1967, it was predicted by, this was by US, this is from the United States, by the way, US Senate Subcommittee. That's a big title. That by 1985, people would be working, what's it say, 22 hours per week. Everyone went, oh, you beauty, couldn't wait. No one laughed. They all nodded and took notes. They said, yeah, okay, that's good. But the reality of the... They said, look at this, they said that we'd be bored. You know what the reality of the new millennium is? It's not 22 hours per week. the average husband and wife are putting in, are you ready for it? 80 to 90 hours per week together. So the husband's got the most outside of the home. He's putting in around about 48 hours per week, and the wife's putting in, you know, 35 to 40. But for the girls, I hope this is not in the truth, brothers and sisters. I mean, this is what's killing us. But for the girls, if they're feeling tired, it's because when that's outside the home. When they get home, they've got about 30 to 40 hours domestic duties to also attend to. And the guys have about 1 to 2 hours, so that's up to 50. And that's stressful. It is. I believe it's very stressful. And so I love this because this is a maxim that no country in the world has ever transgressed. That is, no husband has ever been shot while doing the dishes. So, and it's getting scary out there sometimes in our homes. I sort of suggest then, brothers and sisters, if you're feeling scared, just go and stand at the sink. You'll be safe there. They look so happy. Some more epidemic symptoms. Everybody's feeling rushed. Who's going to deny that? I mean, we've got kids, haven't we? Who's going to say we're not feeling rushed? Every single morning. And yet I go through the same thing in my head each day. Why don't we just get the clothes and lunches ready the night before? Perhaps you do that. Our family doesn't work like that. And we pay the penalty. I'm serious. 36% feel rushed. The average manager, if there are any managers here, 202 times a day getting interrupted. 8 months of our lives are spent opening junk mail. There's never anything in it. Ever. We spend a whole year looking for misplaced objects, searching for them on our desk. Does anybody know how far the average misplaced object travels? 25 inches. This one is true, and the others are reasonably accurate. 2.5 hours sleep per night less than what we were in 1850. Now that has to have, and they've done studies on this, and they've proven it's got a significant effect on people's physicality. Think about that. It's down to 7 hours. You can't work like that. Does anybody know how many hours a night Einstein had? I think I've got him here. Does anybody know? 4. He had 11 hours a night. There's a quote by a US NFL player, a footballer. Yo, I only need 2 hours sleep a night. So if you've got Einstein in one hand and the NFL footballer in the other hand, who are you likely to believe? Now think about that. I always wondered why his hair was so bad too. So, but 2.5 hours less sleep, and it goes on and on. Is it a figment of our imagination, brothers and sisters, or is something going on in this world out there? I believe something's going on. All our life is taken up with rush, 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 all the time. It never, ever stops. There was a survey that came out of Israel where what they did was they got these burnt-out people and they measured all the burnt-out parameters. They said, this is what a burnt-out person looks like. And they gave these people a 2-week vacation. And they managed to decompress all the burnout parameters so that these people were starting to feel good again. And they were. Their lives and enthusiasm for life had actually returned. But the problem was, as soon as they stepped back on the day-to-day treadmill, within another 2 weeks, they'd reached baseline burnout again. Straight away. Whereas once the older brothers and sisters amongst us would take a week off in, when's your summer holidays? Just gone, like, okay, July, August. You take a week off and you go and rent an old mouldy cabin somewhere down by the beach and you just get a book and just vegetate for a week and read the book and you'd be right again. You'd feel revitalized and you'd be good for another whole year. See, that sort of therapy doesn't work anymore. We've got to start to learn We have to learn, actually, brothers and sisters, because this is going to happen to us whether we like it or not. We have to learn the secret of ongoing renewal. Renewal every day, of actually tearing away from the busyness of life, that treadmill, and actually securing for ourselves and our families, personally and for our families, some quiet time, some God time, some reflection time, some time to pray. And if we don't, all of this will happen to us. It's happening to our cultures in all the world, all the Western societies, with all the time-saving devices, the most stressed-out countries. This is where it's all happening. Something is going on in our lives, and I believe it's actually toxic to the truth. It's squeezing the truth out of our life. And for those of you that are still here and remain, I believe it's squeezing the life out of the truth, the heart that pumps here, the enthusiasm for the truth, the desire to preach, the desire to bring somebody to the hall. We haven't even got the energy to do things like that sometimes. These are some of the things that tell me that the whole world is environmentally, mentally, economically, physically exhausted, and we've got to judge it. Because if you dip the bucket into the well and you pull the bucket up, there's got to be something in the well, isn't there? There's got to be something in the bucket. And if your well is dry, brothers and sisters, we've got to work out ways of renewing our resources. We really do. For the older ones amongst us who have retired, maybe you still feel it. Maybe you do feel rushed. I'm going to show you a few things which are undeniable. Now, what's the reason? What's behind all of this chaotic, this time in this unprecedented time? Get off that. And the answer is progress. I'm not having a shot at progress in itself. Progress per se is okay. God said when he made Adam and Eve, he told them, like, replenish the earth. Go and work on the earth. But you see, progress is not, it's not totally innocent, because progress doesn't just give us good things. It gives us a lot of bad things as well. And progress works in these three ways, and these, I promise, are the biggest words you'll hear from me all weekend. Differentiation, proliferation, thanks for that, Jordan, and combination. Now, obviously, the last two, proliferation and combination, we can work that out. Many of more things in a complex and combining way. But what's differentiation? What's all that about? Well, if I said, if we dragged a log in here, dragged a tree in here, and I said, progress, would you be a deer and differentiate the tree for me? Well, progress would hack up the tree into little pieces. It would make these nice podiums and lovely covers for baptismal baths and tables like that and wooden spoons to smack the kids with and all sorts of things. That's what progress does. Progress, it makes... But the problem is with progress is it always runs in this way. It always gives us more and more of everything faster and faster. And it never goes in the opposite direction, ever in the opposite direction. Always more and more of everything faster and faster. But stop there. Is everything that progress is giving us good? Well, no, it's not. We've said that. It's not good. Progress, without exception, always leads to an increase in stress, change, complexity, speed, and overload. And we're going to have a look at those things, because they're the things that tell me that Christ is about to return to the earth. And all of these things, and we'll look at a graph soon, if you graph them, in the last days compared to 50 years ago, have all reached exponential curves. And this is where the maths gets a bit difficult, and I'm going to try and explain it to you. So stress. What do you think about stress? Is stress bad? Well, it can be. I mean, when I use it, I'm usually talking about de-stress, right? The bad form of stress. But stress in that form is a value neutral word. There's nothing just wrong with stress. But the problem is the type of stress that we generally feel is the bad kind. Okay? It generally is. And so we're often feeling distressed through ecclesial life, the world, our job, our families, whatever it is. Would we go for no stress, do you think? What about no stress? Well, you need some stress in your life. if we just parked you here in the chair and had you stare at the wall for 6 months and gave you no stress, you would literally be dead. You'd be a corpse in that time. You wouldn't even have a pulse for us to come and check. And then we think, well, what about low stress? Because we don't want dead. What about low stress? Well, it sounds tempting. I think, I could probably do that. But you know the kids out there, they've got a word for the low stress environment. Anyone know what it is?
It's boring. That's right. Boring. And we don't want boring any more than they do. It's just that it's been 10 years since you were there. So we forget that we don't like it either. But I can guarantee you won't like it for long.
They've done, what about high stress? They've done studies. Sorry, I'll continue with that. They've done studies between the low stress environment and the high stress environment for a whole month, and people always come back and say they want the high stress environment. Think about that. You'd like to make that choice for yourself, but we'd all choose the same thing. No one wants boring. We don't want dead. But too much of stress, it's the spice of life, but too much of it is, as we said before, it's too toxic. Because if we push beyond a certain limit, guaranteed and reliably, things will break down. Things will start to deteriorate. Like, we'll talk about speed. You can have enough stress. And you can even have more stress in your life. But too much stress, things will break down. And I don't know, brothers and sisters, you'll probably know some that have had breakdowns. I know brothers and sisters back at our own home. It's actually terrible, but it's a true thing. You're going to have problems because stress causes your brain to surge with adrenaline. And adrenaline's good if the car's lying on top of my friend because I can pick it up and get my friend out from underneath it. But if I live on adrenaline all the time, the stress and worry about the kids, the stress and worry about my family, the stress and worry about my ecclesia, the stress and worry about my job, if you're always running on that adrenaline, you will burn out. And you'll have a problem with what's called in your brain your hypothalamus. And then serotonin issues. And if you know what I'm talking about, it's highly likely that you've been there, or at least you know somebody that has, or you've studied it yourself. There was a brother back home, lovely brother, loved him so much. And he was so busy, super busy, and I wanted to say this because this is in terms of the truth, because some people, they build their reputation on busyness. And a mark of always having something to do and being on that committee and this committee and having that talk and teaching Sunday school is a sign that they're living the truth. Well, brothers and sisters, this poor brother, he was one of those brethren. Super faithful, an innocent brother, but busy at work and busy in the ecclesia. And he finally gave out. What happened to him? Well, for 2 weeks he didn't sleep. He sat there on the lounge, ate his meals with the family like normal, and when they all went to bed, he stayed up and he stared at the wall and he sweated for 2 weeks. His body, it just, something inside snapped, something gave way, and he was off work for 6 months. Now, there's not a lot of difference between being that busy and being into that place. It finally took him 6 months to put the wheels back on the wagon. And he even says to this day he could never get back to where he was before. He doesn't feel within himself as strong as what he was before. He went through the first 15, 18 months still with those shakes. Now, I know what happens in the world around me. I work with colleagues. If you're stressed, you go to the doctor. What does the doctor do? I know, but back in the old days, he'd sit down and have a chat. Do you know why? He'd have time. He's time poor as well. He's super stressed. They don't have time anymore. They are only halfway through the diagnosis. They just write the prescription, hand it over to you. And as soon as you take those pills, and we live in a world of self-medicating population, and brothers and sisters, we're not immune to it in the truth. I know that's a fact, and I probably know it's a fact here too, but I'm just saying from someone coming from outside, who knows what it's like in the places that he's come from and lived and seen, we can self-medicate. And you become addicted to that because it makes you feel better. You don't have to slow down anymore because you reach the stage where you're totally exhausted and you take that prescription, you take those pills, and all of a sudden you feel 6 foot tall and bulletproof again and you're ready to go. But the point, your body has got you to that point. And all the warning signs are there to slow down, man, because you are going to break apart. And you take them and you keep on going. And the crash, when you crash and burn, it's bigger and worse than you could ever imagine. Now, that's in the truth. And the whole world is spinning out of control like that. So these are what tells me, brothers and sisters, that we are really living in the last days. Take another one, change. Is change bad? No. But, for example, if I have probably 10 or 15 overheads, like data projection slides, you could deal with that. But if I put up 200 or 300 of them and started flashing through them pretty quickly and you started blinking like that and trying to bite your ear, you'd know that that's too much change. We have to deal with change every day. If I said I'm going to give you all $100, that's change that you have to deal with. That's okay. That's good change. We can handle that. But if I said I was going to take $100 off you, that's more difficult to actually, compute in your mind. Let's talk about change for a second in terms of, well, first of all, how about this for an example? If I took a piece of paper, everyone's done this at school? How many times can you fold a piece of paper? Yeah, about 6 or 7. I think for the strong ones, it's 7, I think. You can get out of it. Just suspend all disbelief for a moment, because this can't happen, but if it could, if I could fold that piece of paper 40 times, not just 7, 40 times, does anybody know how wide it would be?
Couple of micro.
See, I don't even know what that means. So you're talking to an English teacher. I can't even spell that. No, if you could just keep following, because as you fold, it gets fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter. So how wide it would go from here to the moon. Now, I don't know if your intuition told you that, but I hear there's some good scientific theory behind it. You can go and look it up. The population is one way I'm going to illustrate this to you. Guess how long it took to get our first 1 billion people here on Earth? A whole 1 billion. That's a lot of people. 1,800 years. Finally. I don't know who was counting, but 1,800 years. Finally, they got the first 1 billion people. So that's, I mean, we're not including the flood and all that, so I'm not sure how all that works, but say from the Lord's time. 1,800 years. That's as far back as we've gone. The second 1 billion only took another 130 years. And then 3 billion people 30 years later. And then 15 years later, 4 billion. And so forth and so on. And we've reached 7 billion, haven't we? Now think about that. As words on the page, it's probably on the same as you. That means nothing to me. But if we graph that, this is what it looks like. It looks like that. There's a flat line. It goes like this. And even that doesn't do it justice, because you get around to the 1830, the 1900s, that time period, which we're familiar with because that's recent history, modern history, and the graph takes a right angle bend and a thrust almost vertical. A J curve, a hockey stick curve, whatever. You've probably heard these terms before. And for all the older brothers and sisters, the older ones that may be 60 years old and over, who find it difficult to understand the young people, who find it difficult to understand why there is so much change and why the young people can't sit still and why this culture around us always wants a variation. What's wrong with having the same? It's because, and this is a realistic, a literal fact, that you were actually born on that flat line or just before the curve, when things were slow and measurable and things were linear. We didn't have these types of graphs before about 1950, 60, 70. People start, and the problem is with exponentiality is that your intuition is always behind the curve. It's impossible to predict what it's going to give and what it will produce. And from day to day, because we don't bump our heads on exponentiality, it largely goes unnoticed until somebody says, hey, stop, let's just have a look at this for a moment. We've got to see this in a pictorial form so that you can understand what's happening. My father used to always say to me, what is it with people these days in stress leave? When I was a young fella, I didn't need any stress leave. That's right, Dad, because life wasn't as stressful back then as what it is today. Do you know that we have to, modern man, modern woman, has to learn to negotiate over 20,000 pieces of machinery? 20,000, which range from things like this, the gear stick in the car, the air conditioners and so forth. You think about medieval man, go back there. Medieval man would buy, you know, the Daily Times, you know, the Saturday paper, which is about that thick. And in that paper, there's more data than what he would consume in a whole lifetime. And we read it on a Saturday. And we go, gee, I feel stressed. And we start ticking again. These things are true. Here's another way of looking at it. The Pacific Ocean. 100 million square kilometres. Does anybody know how to describe it? A good word that comes to mind is big. There's room for all the land mass on Earth, just in the Pacific, not all the oceans, just the Pacific Ocean, plus another Asia you can fit into it. Asia's big too. Now let's assume for a moment that it dries up. And it's got no water in it. And it's our job to fill it. And I'm gonna bequeath to you a single drop of water. And we're gonna double that drop. From 1 to 2, from 2 to 4, from 4 to 8, from 8 to 16, you understand? From 16 to 32 drops, from 32 drops to, it's getting out of my hands now, 64. So we've doubled. That was about 5 doublings. So how many doublings will it take until the Pacific Ocean is filled again? Full. How many do you think? 60? There's always someone that ruins it. I expect someone to say like me, oh, 10,000. But thanks, brother, you're almost right. You're pretty close. You're not allowed to answer any more questions. I'm just kidding. 80. Only 80 doublings. And by the fifth or sixth doubling, we only just got to 120 drops. And look at this too. In fact, at the 70th doubling, which is only one-tenth full, it's even smaller. You could put it as a pixel. I couldn't even get the dot smaller than that. At the 70th doubling, it's 0.1% full. So there's hardly enough to even wet your feet. Things have just been muddling along. No one's been noticing anything's been happening. And then all of a sudden, things start to ratchet up. And the 70th doubling starts, and then even when it gets to the 79th doubling, it's only half full, then boom, and in a blink. See, that's exponentiality, where things can go from almost undetectable to overwhelming instantly. Ernest Hemingway was asked, because he went broke apparently, how do you actually go broke? And he said, at first very slowly, and then all at once. And it just happens. Things cascade out of control. And that's the world in which we live, where things happen in the blink of an eye. And something that you didn't even notice before, and all of a sudden things have got out of control. But things weren't always. The ages of man weren't always like that. Things were once linear. And if you went back to the time of Shakespeare, and if you took a photograph of Shakespeare when he was born, and he only lived to about 80-odd, but if you took a photograph of him at the end of his life, except for something for the kids, you wouldn't notice anything measurably different in the two photographs. Life had hardly changed in medieval England, and nothing was different at all. Nothing odd, nothing out of the ordinary, not a bit. But in the last 100 years, we've gone through more change than in all recorded history. Now think about that. You have to actually just stop and go, oh, let me just take that in. In the last 100 years, we've gone through more change than in all recorded history.
There's nothing like the age in which we live on the map of human history. Nothing. Nothing like it at all. We've got a sister at our meeting. It's my wife's great-great-grandmother. She's 105. And she's lived to see it. I've always thought she's looked slightly shocked, slightly surprised. She's seen more change than anybody else in the history of the earth. They predict that in the next 20 years, we're all going to go through another 100 years of change in 20 years. But I think to myself, well, the Father sits still for that long. I mean, can that happen? Another 20 years of going at this pace. And could you imagine a faster pace? There's a science futurist that predicts that in the next 100 years, we're going to go through 20,000 years worth of change. Except that's impossible, brothers and sisters. That's not going to happen. That just can't happen. God's going to wrap things up in our age. And I believe these signs tell us that there's no way we could go on for any longer. We live in 2012. Think about that. Say that number to yourself in your mind, 2012, and think about what it means. Ask yourself, is what he's presenting real? Are these things really happening in my life? Am I really feeling that stress? Do I remember the days where I had times for walks? I had time to pray? Do you ever, as parents, you know how you always pray with your children before you go to bed? Or at least you say that's my ideal. Do you ever have those times where just inadvertently you're sitting at your desk and the kids have gone to bed and they haven't prayed and you think I should really get up now and go and offer a prayer with them, but you just don't? Because its house is quiet? That would never have happened in the past. We're too busy, brothers and sisters. We're too fast. What about speed? Does anybody come from, like, Indiana to here? How long does it take to get from Indiana to here?
When I
drive. I'm not sure what sort of qualification that was then.
5 hours,
that's too long for me, isn't it, to be on the road? Why don't they just up the speed limit 20 kilometres a year so that in, you know, 20 years' time you can get from here to Indiana in, say, an hour? Why don't they do that? Well, we all know, isn't there? Because fast is okay and fast is all right. But too fast is not all right. And you reach a certain speed and reliably you'll be out of control. Isn't that right? And so they've worked it out. In our, where we live, around town is 50 kilometres per hour. They've actually dropped it because they realise people always go a little bit faster. So 60 plus another, you know, 9 or 10 kilometres up to 70. That's too fast in town. So they've backed it off because we live in a stressful world. And backing it off to 50 has made people even more irritable. And I don't think it's helped it anything at all. That's the way it is. Someone said once that a man is going too fast for a world that is round. Sooner or later he's going to catch up with himself in a great rear-end collision. I believe him. We're moving into what about overload? What's overload? Has anybody ever felt overloaded before? Does anybody want to give me a definition of what they think overload is? That's right, too much input. What, from the good wife, or? That's terrible. I didn't say that. Well, overload, if you're overloaded, it's simple as this. There's 100%. If you're 101%, you're overloaded. Jordan here could carry 5 bricks, maybe. Lauren could carry 6, perhaps. And then she's overloaded. Jordan's already overloaded at 5. I don't know how this works, but that's 100%. You are fully loaded. If we're running at 80% in any sort of, whatever you want to graph, whether it's psychologically, emotionally, mentally, physically, if you're running at 80%, well, that 20% buffer zone is called your margin. And that's what we've got to get back, brothers and sisters, a little bit more margin in our life. We live in a marginless society. It's always up on the 100% and over. And to keep on going so they don't crash and burn, what they do is they self-medicate. They do.
And they will have, as you know, all the consequent issues and problems from leading a lifestyle like that. There's absolutely no doubt at all. Now, you may not like this diagnosis, but it's a fact. You may even resent it. You may even say, well, I don't accept it. It's fine. It will happen to you whether you accept it or not. This is the river that we all swim in. And it's really hurting the truth. We're going to ask ourselves, what's at stake here? What's at stake? Because these things are pretty important. What our productivity is at stake. Try and think in terms of our service to God, not in terms of, you know, our KPIs at work, not in terms of how much money we make. Our productivity for Christ. How many people have you brought to the truth in the last 10 years? How many people have you brought to the meeting in the last 10 years? How many people have you taught the truth to, talked the truth to, just mentioned it to? Our longevity, people are dying younger. Heart disease is up. They link it to stress. There's absolutely no doubt about that at all. It's all linked to stress. It's all linked to progress. It's all linked to the stress that we get in our life because of our change and our marginless lives. What about our morale and our excellence for Christ and our enthusiasm, like joy and our passion for the truth? Joy is an early casualty. Do you know it appears hundreds of times, blessing, blessedness, joy, happiness in the Bible? Brothers and sisters, it is our birthright to be joyful for Christ. But where's the joy gone in our service to him? Even our efficiency, you know? And what about you? What are your symptoms of overload? You'll find yourself up there. All of us are up there somewhere. Different sets of symptoms, perhaps, for one another. What about this? Abnormal sleeping or eating patterns. Ever come home from a meeting, brethren, and can't get to sleep because you're worried about the ecclesia? Can't sleep. You know, my problem is not sleeping. I can sleep. No matter how stressful the world is, I've never had a problem with stress, and that's not my problem. But I get apathetic and I withdraw. I don't have much depression. I don't have Mondayitis or I can't get out of bed. You ever had that? Can't get out of bed, just cannot face the week. That's what some people experience, but I get irritable. My wife doesn't like me when I get stressed. She said, who are you? Where'd you come from? Did I marry you? What planet are you from? I've got to get some more margin in my life so that I can maintain my relationships, not just with her, but with you and my children. Fatigue and exhaustion, all those things, just nod to me. Can you see yourself up there? The problem is with us, we don't, like if you're driving your car down the interstate and something goes wrong with your motor, you have a red light that flashes on the dashboard that suggests to you that you should perhaps pull over and get the motor seen to or checked. But we don't have a red light on the end of our nose going blink, blink, warning, warning, that you've got a problem. We've got to be aware. We've got to be acutely aware and sensitive to our own symptom complex. What is going on in our body? When I start to get irritable, stop and check myself. Matt, what are you doing? You're not a nice person today. Well, maybe because you had a flat tire and you had all these lists of things you wanted to do. And if you could only do them, well, you'd be really maximally effective. But, mate, you've just lost it. You've got to pull back. Maybe we need to pray more, brothers and sisters. I'll role play for you what I mean. You need to know your individual symptoms. So over here, I think this is my limit, is it? Is 80%. Here's 100%. And here's 120%. So at 80%, who's the secretary or the recorder of an ecclesia here? Don't worry, I won't ask you to come up on stage. Okay, I'll just introduce Brother Jordan again. Brother Jordan's organising Paris Avenue Bible class and so forth, and you get the phone call from Brother Jordan at 80%. So you've got a whole raft of margin there, and you're feeling really good about life. Close to God, you love your brothers and sisters, and you got all the joy for the truth and all the passion. And Jordan rings up and says, you know, Brother Matt,
could you fill in for Bible class this Wednesday night? Do you have it on Wednesday nights? This Wednesday, because, you know, the poor brother, he's really sick, and it'd be a shame to cancel Bible class. And you go, you know what? It would be a shame to cancel Bible class. Well, you know, I've been doing some study lately. I've got a bit of time on my hands. You know, thanks, Brother Jordan, for asking. I'd love to do Bible class for you. He rings up and says, could you take Sunday school? Poor fella has broken his leg, or maybe the family's gone to do mission work for 3 months. We just need you to take it for 3 months. And you say, well, I love kids. I really do. And it would be a great opportunity for me to get back into Bible study once more. Sure, I'll do that. Thanks for asking, Jordan. I'm so happy about all this at the moment. And then you get home on a Friday afternoon, your wife says, you know that family in the meeting? They've been there for 6 months. I don't even think they've seen our house. Would you like to invite them over? And you say, sure, honey, let's do it. Call them right now. Let's have them over tomorrow night. And so you do that. That's 80%. We toddle off over here, and we get to 100% right up now on our full load. Jordan rings up and says, would you take Bible class? And we go, you know, Jordan, you should see my calendar. I've got so much on at the moment, and my family would just annihilate me if I took on something else. Well, look, just leave it with me. I've got to go home. I'll have a family conference. We'll talk about it. I'll get back to you. Look, okay, I'll do it. I'll do it just this once, okay? You hang up and you go, hold on a second. What's happened to me? I used to be so willing and eager and enthusiastic, and now I don't even want to do it. And you feel bad slightly at 100%. And Jordan rings up and says, what about Bible class? Sunday school. Would you take that for 3 months? And you go, well, Jordan, I'd like to, and thanks for asking. No, really, thank you for asking, but I can't right now because I've just got so much on my plate. How about give me a call later down the track, you know, when life gets better down the track? And you get home on a Friday afternoon, your wife says, that family, we've got to have them over for dinner. And you say, but honey, have you seen our schedule? We're booked up for the next 6 months. What are we now, September? Christmas is coming. How about April next year? We'll pencil them in for April. And see, she doesn't even laugh. She goes, okay, that should fit. And you move up here to 120%, right? Full throttle now. Thruster at going foot to the floor. Jordan rings up and he says, Brother Matt, would you take Sunday school? Would you do Bible class for me, please, just one night? And you go, Jordan, just stop right there. I'm sick and tired of everybody just dumping their problems on my desk. No, I am. I'm sick. Not only will I not do it, but you can take me off the speaking list. No, better still, I'm shifting ecclesias. What's the closest ecclesia to Paris Avenue? And you're not even sad about it. Hang up on him. 120%. He rings up and says, could you take Sunday school? And you go, what? Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? I hate kids. What would ever give you? You're a fool. What would ever give you that idea that I want to teach Sunday school? Bang. You get home on a Friday afternoon. Your wife says, what about that family? And you say, well, what about them? She says, well, we should have them. Should. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get home on a Friday afternoon. I'm going to lock the front door. I've got all the movies that I could carry from the video shop. I'm going to push the fridge over to the bed. I'm going to bed. I'm not coming out till Monday morning. You do what you like. And, you know, I've done that many times. And the role player, man. And not one brother or sister has ever said, I think you just overplayed it a bit. If it's not in their life, they can see, well, dramatically, it's in the life of people they love. That represents for us what life can be like at 120% when we're overloaded, and it's not good. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't martyr ourselves for the truth. I'm pro-service. I'm pro-martyr. I'm saying serve God. Serve Him with all your might and your heart and soul, but if you fall apart, brothers and sisters, if you go to the doctor and you take that prescription and you just keep on going, blasé, and think you'll be fine, not only will you fall over, but then your wife is going to have to nurse you back to health as well. And you put all that pressure on her, or vice versa, or the ecclesia. These things are extremely real, and they're affecting us.
And I suggest they are affecting the Paris Avenue Ecclesia as much as they are in Lismore. So let's just finish up by looking at a few. Like, if that's all the symptoms, you're surely not going to leave us, Brother Matt, without some remedies. Well, let's have a look at some of these things which we could possibly do to remedy the situation we're in. Well, first of all, we've got to become intentional. You can't deny what I'm saying today. You can't just look at me and say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're talking about somebody else's life. You will do that to your own detriment and to your family's detriment. So first of all, we've got to make the acknowledgement and say, okay, I want to do something about it. And then we've got to learn to say no. Now, this is where it gets very interesting, because on Monday night we've got tennis night. Then on Tuesday night we're going to have a barbecue with our friends. And on Wednesday night we're going to have a movie night. Then on Thursday night we'll play more sport. Well, Wednesday night's your Bible class. So, boy, the week looks pretty well booked out. I'm not sure I'll be able to make it to Bible class. We learn to say no. What do we say no to? You know, if I haven't... This is me. If my kids are sick, we might say no to Bible class. We can't go to Bible class. But if I'm off wakeboarding, surfing, or playing sport the next day and I haven't gone to Bible class, I wonder what my Heavenly Father thinks about that, brothers and sisters. Because it's legitimate, isn't it, that we have to refuel sometimes. What do we say no to? How often is it the truth is the first thing to get cut out of our life? I can't fulfill that appointment. I'm too busy. Don't ask me to pray. I can't give that talk, brothers and sisters. No, I can't teach Sunday school. You'll have to take me off the catering committee. But my whole rest of my life is flat out with great, exciting things I'm doing for myself. We've got to learn to say no. There's only 24 hours in the day. And obviously, we've got to say no to the right things. We've got to learn to tame our technology. We all rely on it. No one's going to say, do you think I'm fool enough to say, look, just go and sell all your computers and your televisions and your iPods. Look, we've moved on from that. But we're going to tame it, aren't we? Let's use it for God. Look, the time-saving technologies don't. Instead, they compress, consume, and devour time. All the countries with the most time-saving technologies are the most stressed-out countries on earth. Now, that's saying something, isn't it? Phone, email, beepers, computers, cell phones. It makes me start sweating just thinking about it all. What about selectively disconnect? Because, do you know, there's a difference between felt choice and actual choice. People say, I just can't. Well, there's a difference between what you feel and what you can do. Has anybody ever done that? Gone outside on a Friday afternoon when the whole family's home to where the power box is, or your power box might be inside. There's a switch that says mains. Just switch it to off and see what happens. You'll have all the margin that you want for that night. Oh, what about the fridge? The fridge will take care of itself for a couple of hours. Don't worry. Everything will still be cold. Trust me. We've done it before, but the problem is I've done it so long ago, Zoe can't even remember it. Do on that particular night only what you could do in the 18th century. Roll back 200 years, no electricity. Just have a barbecue. Probably use matches to start, okay? I tried striking rocks together and it was a waste of time. If you get it working, like, let me know how you got it working. I'd be glad to hear. But just head for the desert with your family. Light some candles. Have a nice simple meal together. Do the reading by candlelight. Talk about the medieval brethren. Talk about how they were, you know, persecuted and chased from city to city. And talk about the kingdom with them. And just see, do it once a month. And see how it feels, whether you like it or not. I bet you'll like it. Unclutter. Look at that. Everything we own owns us. And we only use 20% of what we have. That blows my mind, those numbers. 20%. We only need 20%. I mean, where do they get these numbers from? And I want to know how they got into my house in the first place. I could literally go home and get rid of 80% of the things that I own, and I could still have a quality and a comfortable life. And you know what? I believe that. I believe it. We need to cultivate contentment, and we could talk for a long time about that.
There's no threshold of satiety provable in economic theory. Think about that. So you would think if I just had this much, there'd be enough. And they say it's never been proven that enough is enough. People always want more. In fact, because of progress, they're getting used to the fact that they're getting more and more of everything faster and faster. Anything they want now is at their fingertips. We need to slow the pace, and we need to hurry less. And I don't know about this one, what it's like in the States, but in Australia, this is way out of control. You know, massive debt has been normalised in the last 20 or 30 years. What once was maybe a few years' wages of debt is now, it is way out of control how much people owe. And the banks were stupid enough to give the money away. And you know what happens when you owe too much? Well, you've got to work harder. And if you have this particular type of house, now it's not just the husband, the wife must work. She's tied to that for 20 or 30 years. Is that the way you want to live the truth, brothers and sisters? It's not the way I want to live. I want to nourish the relationship at home and here at the Ecclesia. So I can sit and talk to people, not hurry through the crowd, you know, and race out the door, shaking hands with 100 people as I leave. I'd rather talk to 2 or 3 people and have a good conversation with them than 200 or 300 that you don't even really touch. But I haven't got time. So better off just waving as I go by. Is that effective? It's not effective. All these things tell me, brothers and sisters, that we live at a time when Christ is about to return. We're going too fast. The world cannot sustain this type of speed. And if it is affecting you and your family and your ecclesia, maybe it's time that we did something about it.